Okay, we're looking at Perek Chafei, chapter 25. And the very first verse, again, is a very, very well-known pasuk that says, it is the glory of Hashem for matters to be concealed. It is the glory of kings for matters to be investigated and revealed.
25:2.
Yeah. So the simple meaning, once again, is that human beings want all of their exploits to be publicized. They can boast about them, they can have gaiva. But with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is the very understanding that we have that we don't understand. That is the greatest covet for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As if to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unfathomable. Hashem cannot be understood. And that is the greatest covet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is also given as the explanation why the sodos of Kabbalah are not really explained to most people, why Chazal and Agadita speak in mysteries and in riddles, because once again, it is the glory of Hashem to keep matters concealed. In fact, even a philosophical work like the Mora Nebuchim, the Rambam actually writes many times in the Mora Nebuchim, it's very, very interesting, that he says, he is giving you bits and pieces of truth that you have to pierce together from different prakim. And in other words, you're not going to understand it unless you understand the whole thing. And he says he wrote it in a deliberately obscure way, filled with contradictions, so that only the person who is truly worthy of understanding will understand it. Now, in many ways, this is a country, you know, we would not imagine that a writer would write this way. That's not the way, you know, we normally assume that the purpose of communication is to be understood. But there is a concept that certain matters should be communicated in a way that they can only be understood by the people who will use it correctly, and that is nichlal in the Kavaita Lokim Haster Haster Dabar.
Does the beginning of the Mora say this should be only read by people who are very learned, so that he's clarifying it?
Well, he more or less says that. It's not necessarily learned. He doesn't say you have to be learned in Torah, but you have to have a philosophical understanding of the basic issues of the universe.
Thank you.
Now, the contrast between Kvod Elokim and Kvod Malachim, lefi pshat, is Hashem versus human kings. But the Gra brings another explanation, that Malachim can in fact refer to Talmidei Chachamim, as we often find, Man Malchi Rabbanan, and the differentiation that's being drawn here is not the differentiation between divine wisdom and human politics, but rather, even in divine wisdom, there is a part that remains concealed, and a part that remains open. So Kvod Malachim would be the pilpul of Torah, the halacha of Torah, what is called the nigla of Torah. That is the other way around. There are mystical parts of Torah that remain hidden and concealed, but there are other parts of Torah that were supposed to be dorish v'chok. In fact, it's a funny thing, Hasidim used to, it's not really akasha, but they used to say, what's the heter to ask kashas? He says, what's the heter to ask kashas? I mean, you want Hashem, if Hashem says the halacha, what are you asking a kasha? Meaning there actually was an idea that how can you ask kashas? How can you be mafalpo? Right? You're questioning Hashem? But we know that that sounds like an absurd thing because fakeret, that's the very process of Torah Shebal Peh. That's what it says. Kavod Malachim, the glory of Malachim. Malachim means the Talmidei Chachamim is chakor davor. They investigate, like a chakira, right? The word chakira, although we give it an artificial meaning today, chakira is, you know, a two-sided question. Chakira just means to be doresh v'choker, to investigate deeply any particular issue. That's the old joke. People write very learned essays, and none of it comes out very, very clear, but they want to analyze the different durachim in learning. When you come to yeshiva, you know, this is a big topic in the Beis Medrash. You know, what derech does your yeshiva have? Is it a brisker derech? What actually is a brisker derech? I mean, Rabbi Akiva Eiger couldn't have had a brisker derech because he was before bris, right? So what exactly are these derechim? And then you get into subtleties, which I can't even give you a real good explanation. What's the difference between the brisker derech and the telsh derech? Right, etc. And the like, you know, what type of analysis is different? So there's a whole article somebody wrote about analyzing. He took a thing about if you put sugar and you put it into tea and you stir it, is it the stirring that makes it sweet? Is it the sugar that makes it? He went through our Rav Chaim and he said, and the maskana was the Svardik Derech Halimut, which is very, very pshat oriented. Got impatient. Of course, it's the stirring of the sugar. What are you clearing anyway? So he just walked away. The Svardik guy just walked away. But what do they say? But in Tells in particular, there was a Derech that had all sorts of chakiris. Rav Shimon Shkap was Rav Shiva in Tells, although that was not his main yeshiva. He was a Magid Shir in Tells. He then founded a yeshiva in Grudna, was his place. But the chakiris and tells were often very, very abstract. Is it this or is it this? And there seemed to be no practical difference between them. Like, chakiris is not that meaningful unless you can identify a practical difference that arises if I say this way or this way. So in tells, they had an answer for everything. He says, oh, you want to know the practical nafkamina? Nafkamina is, if you're Makadish, a woman, on the condition of this side of the Chakira, so Mimela, if it's this side of the Chakira, the Kedushin is Chal, and if it's that side of the Chakira, so it's a Nafkamina. Every Chakira has that Nafkamina, so there's always going to be a Nafkamina and the like. But they say that one of the Telzer Chakiras once involved Kedushin. Is Kedushin something that every second there's like a new Kenyan, that you're kind of her at 10 o'clock and then at 10:01? Or is it one Maisa Kinyan forever that took place? Or is it a Kinyan HaMishchadesh B'chol Yom? So supposedly, as somebody said the Sakira to Rav Chaim, so Rav Chaim said to the person, well, if you want to say it's Mishchadesh every day, I want to give you a Mazel Tov on your marriage. Rav Chaim himself didn't like it. But be it as it may, the idea of chakira, as we use in the yeshiva world, can be abused, but the authentic meaning of chakira is to simply look at something in depth, to analyze it, to try to understand it. That is the koach of Torah Shebal Peh. So it's a contrast, the Gra says. On one hand, there is an inyan of kavod Elokim is to understand how we don't understand. And at the same time, we have to be chaker at the same time, to whatever degree of our ability. In fact, one of the nafkaminas between Rav Chaim and Rav Shimon was that Rav Chaim said, we can never ask why, we can only analyze what. In other words, so when a brisker looks at a sugya, well, actually, the truth is, this is the way we all do it today, we're trying to analyze what the sugya says. Now, we don't necessarily, or what is the meaning of a halacha? We don't necessarily say, why is it that way? That is taka beyond us. Rav Shimon tries to go into why that is so. But Rav Chaim, a famous statement from Rav Chaim, our job is to understand the what, it is not to understand the why. Now, I don't want to get into too many complications, but I mean, there is a problem with that, really. And I don't want to confuse people. I mean, the problem basically is that you sometimes cannot say what a what is unless you have some type of theory of why. Because when you have a bunch of raw data, a lot of cases, and you're trying to understand the Yisayit, right? So the Yisayit is based on Svara, because there are different ways of analyzing data. And the Svara is going to be based on some idea of why. So the Emma says, to say you can determine a what without any type of Havana of a why is not so pashut. But this is what Rav Chaim says. We're just to see the state. What does it say? And Mimela, you know, it's not our job to know why there is that. But okay. So that's the Haster Dovor and the Chakor Dovor. Okay. Now, let's just go to Pasuk Dalet. Again, we're going to be a bit selective here. The Pasuk says, Hago Sigim Mikesef Vayetse Latsayref Kli. We'll read Dalet and Hay together because there are a couplet. The word hago, it's an unusual verb, but it refers to removal of things. Again, it's somewhat connected to hegal libi, that when the heart communicates something, that means a thought comes from the heart into the lips. That's called hegyon libi. Hegyon does not just mean the thoughts of the heart, but the thoughts of the heart that become communicated. So when a thought is communicated, it leaves the heart and goes to the lips and then into the atmosphere, so to speak. So it's a relatively rare verb, but hago sigim mikesef means when sigim are impurities. When impurities are removed from silver, because silver, when you extract it from the ground, has a bunch of dirt and other impurities. So what do you get? Yetzei latsoreif kli. The soreif is the smelter. The smelter gets a good vessel. When I get rid of the impurities, I have a valuable vessel. So what's the comparison? So Pasuk Hey says, Hago rasha lifnei melech. When you remove a rasha from in front of a king, take the rishayim out of the kingdom, right? So the same way, when I remove the impurities of silver, I get a kli. When I remove the rasha from the melech, yikon bat tzedek kiso, his throne, his government, his authority will be established with righteousness. Now again, all of these pshatim have multiple meanings. Literally, and again, ein mikra yesim de pshutei. Often the literal meaning is certainly a legitimate pshat. A lot of Mishlei is a manual of government. It is directed to kings. Shlomo HaMelech was a king of a very large empire, and he knows himself, and for some of this has been avua, because if you recall, Shlomo HaMelech's son was Rechavam. And if you remember the story of Rechavam, Rechavam thought that he would get tough. He had different advisors. The older advisor said, be gentle with the people, do not be too demanding on them. The younger advisor said, get them in line, they have to know your boss. So he decided to listen to the younger advisors, and he started imposing taxes and the like. So if you recall what happened, Yeravam ben Nevat, who initially was a tzaddik, he later became a rasha, led a revolt of 10 tribes, broke away from Rechavam, and they established the northern kingdom of 12 tribes, of 10 tribes. That's the Malchus Yisrael. Now, it's interesting, initially it was Al-Pi Navi, it was Al-Pi Hashem, but the precipitating cause was Rechavam's abuse of power. And Rechavam's abuse of power, the Gemara Nedarim says, was because he was influenced by bad people, inexperienced people, and arrogant people, and people who didn't understand that if you push your population too much, they're going to revolt against you. So in many, many ways, Shlomo HaMelech is speaking with Ruach HaKodesh to his own son. And of course, a lot of Mishlei anyway is addressed from a father to a son. And that is, get rid of these bad people, and then your Malchus will be firmly established. And indeed, the Medrash itself says that this is a remes to what happened with Rechavam later. And the Gemara Nedarim says, too, that Binyan Na'arim Stira, that when young, inexperienced people think they're doing something, it really turns out to be stira. Stira means destruction. Stira sekenim, and when older people tell you, don't do something, it looks like they're taking down your kingdom, that's a binyan and the like. So the simple meaning, once again, is ein mikra yesim de pshutei, and again, we can apply it to a lot of things other than a government. It could be applied to a parent-child relationship. Again, these are practical lessons. Meaning to say, too much discipline, you might lose your child. You have to know. How do Chazal put it? Chazal put it in a very beautiful way, that in the relationship of a parent to a child, yamin mikareves usmol docha. Yamin, with apologies to lefties, we always look at the right hand as the stronger hand. Yamin mikareves, the stronger hand, should be one of endearment and drawing close. There needs to be discipline. But discipline should be with the left hand, the weaker hand. The discipline should be the weaker aspect of the relationship. It should not be dominant. And once again, because you see what happened with Rechavam.
Rabbi, I see from Al-Pi Kabbalah, the Mishnah Berurah brings down, that when you fill up the cup of washing, you fill it up with the right hand, pass it over to the left, and then you pour on the right hand, because right, this is Chesed. Chesed feeds into Kabbalah. So you mean Bekare. So the right represents chesed.
The right is always chesed. It's a question of cause and effect. The reason why the yamin is chesed is because the yamin is the stronger, And we say Hashem's dominant aspect is chesed. It's all about Talia in and of it, in and of itself. However, the Gra once again gives an additional explanation for the idea of Hago Sigim Mikesev V'Yesu Tzarev Kli. And he said this: the Gra learns a little differently. The Gra actually learns. See, the pashtus of Dalet and Hay is that it's one mashal, meaning the way you would understand it is the same way if I remove impurities from silver, I get a clay. So too, if I remove the evil influences from a king, I get a good government. Right? That, which means, in other words, according to this, Pasuk Dalet is not an independent thought. It is simply the preceding clause to the statement in Hay. But the Gra, on the other hand, learns these are two separate mashalim. There's a mashal of Pasuk Dalet, which is Hago Siga Mikasev, and the mashal of Pasuk Hay. So the Gra already is departing from Rashi and other Mefarshim by looking at it as two separate mashalim. And what he says is that the first mashal, in other words, removing impurities from silver, this refers to purifying your midos. That silver comes from a lashon of kesef. I actually mentioned this last night, not from this pasuk. Kesef, which means silver, also refers to kisufin, yearnings and desires. So if a person yearns and desires to study Torah, he must remove the impurities from his heart, such as by fixing his midos and the like. Now, this was a point that the Gra himself made many, many times. If you remember, just at the end of last parak, the Gra said the amazing thought that why is Torah compared to water? Right. This is a thought that I only say here now because I get in trouble when I say it elsewhere. But here, no one's going to report me here. Have been taken, but I can manipulate it. Yeah, and that is the Gra says that just as water is matzmiach, whatever you pour water on, the water causes to grow. So if I pour water on wheat, I get wheat. If I pour water on poisonous weeds, I get poisonous weeds. Water is matzmiach, whatever is there. So the Gra says amazingly that Taira is matzmiach, whatever is within the panemius of a person. So if the person has midos tovos, the Torah will increase those midos tovos. Right? That's the non-controversial part. But the more controversial part is the Gra says that Torah can actually make a person worse in some ways. That if a person is an arrogant, a person's a balgaiva, then the Torah could be an avenue where he becomes more of a balgaiva, etc. Balgaiva is an arrogant person. That the Torah becomes an avenue for this person's pride. So Torah is like water, and therefore the Gra says, if you want to become close to God by learning Torah, and of course that will bring you close to God, but there's a condition that you also work deliberately on improving your character traits, your midos, to become a more humble person, a more generous person, a kinder person. And that's what the Gra says is the meaning of Pasuk Dalet, that you have to remove the impurities from the silver. The silver refers to your yearning to study Torah, your kisufin, your desire, kesef, to become close to God. But you're not going to be able to become a kli. Kli means, right, a receptacle. Because that's exactly what you want to be. I want to be a receptacle to receive the light of God's Torah. That's the whole language of Kabbalah. Oros and Kalim. The light is received in a vessel. So I want, Torah is called light, but the light is in a vessel. But I can't be a vessel until the impurities are removed. And therefore, this is making the point yet again, a point that is made many, many times, that without midos tovos, the light of... Now again, we have to understand this. The concepts are not so explicit here. The information of Torah, one can have even if you're not a Bal Midos. A person could know a lot of things. He could be a professor of Jewish studies somewhere, know a lot of things, although the truth is most professors of Jewish studies don't know a lot, but some do. a few of them do, even though they're maybe very, very non-religious or even anti-religious and the like. But the information of Torah is not what we mean by the light of Torah. The light of Torah is something more than the information. It is the closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that one has by learning the Torah. The sense of being connected, the sense of being enlightened, being uplifted. And that, the Vilna Gaon says, the midos ra'os, the bad character traits that we have, are like the impurities of silver that prevent you from making a vessel out of it, so you cannot be a vessel for the light of Torah unless you remove the impurities. So again, this is parallel to the Graz Vort, that Torah is compared to water, etc.
Could in case of Acher be where he was able to absorb Torah, even though he had the initial, by his birth, the haughtiness, and he deviated away from Torah? In other words, he was able to absorb so much wisdom, maybe because he had a good Rebbe and Talmidim, he connected But he had a kilkel, he had a deficit because he had the impurities, he had the dross of the lack in his personality, the initial haughtiness.
I mean, Acher, again, is a very, very tragic person. You know, on one hand, you know, he did become a heretic and the like. On the other hand, you know, to his great credit, he specifically did not want to mislead his Talmud, Rabbi Meir, that when Rabbi Meir is running after him, Acher tells him, oh, you can't go, this is on Yom Kippur, this is the Tchum Shabbos, etc. In other words, he didn't want to say, oh, now I have another person I can ensnare in my trap. So that was
Acher's Rebbe?
Who was Acher's Rebbe?
What did you say?
I didn't say it was Rebbe once. I just said that Acher's student was Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir was Acher's student. And Acher specifically, Acher was once riding a horse on Yom Kippur that fell out on Shabbos, and he was eating treif, you know, so it's a lot of averes. Treif and Yom Kippur and Shabbos and riding a horse. And Rebbe Meir was asking him shailas in halacha as they're walking. And Elisha ben Avoya is answering the questions. And at some point, he tells Rabbi Meir, he says, you can't go past this point because it's going to be 2,000 amos past the Shabbos boundary, so you're not allowed to go. Right? So he actually told him that you can't go.
If he's a heretic, you're allowed to ask him questions?
So this is the famous Gemara. The Gemara says, how could Rabbi Meir learn from a teacher who is a heretic? And the Gemara gives the famous teretz that Rabbi Meir found a pomegranate, he ate the good seeds, and he threw away the peel. So people use that as a heter today. They say, oh, I could get like this course and that course. The answer is, though, when you're Rabbi Meir, you can learn from Acher. But it takes a great, great madrega. It takes a very high person to be able to separate. For most of us, it's the other way around. So if anything, in fact, sometimes people have a tendency, they take the peel and throw away the seeds. People badafka have a tendency, they will gravitate badafka to the stuff that's not good. And a little bit of good stuff, though, that they're not going to... Soloveitchik once said it about himself. They said that people took on, like, the smoke, not the bad things, there weren't any bad things, but, you know, the minor things, and they didn't take on the major things. You know, it happens sometimes that we get focused on different chitzenias that's relatively minor.
The influence is so bad that the teacher is not accepted the glory of Hashem and accepted the yoke of the kingdom of heaven, that Rabbi Yochanan Wasserman in the famous pamphlet, Ikvus of the Mashiach, you shouldn't, even if kids, the only teachers around are those who are not role models of Torah, don't even teach the little kids Aleph Beis, because there'll be, and I know a case in Toronto where they had a school where the kids who were being taught and they saw their teacher writing on Shabbos and it had a negative effect. It was like a modern...
No, there's no question. If anything, it's going to be worse with younger children, for sure. For sure.
Because they don't have the resistance.
Right. So according to the Gra, Pasuk Dalet is a self-contained statement. It is not linked to Pasuk Hey, and it refers to the idea that if you want to be a vessel to receive Torah, you have to rectify your midos. And again, the Rambam, now the Rambam has a one should try to learn it sometime. The Rambam has a very yesodistic, a very important introduction to Pirkei Avos that's called the Shemayna Prakim, the eight chapters. Pirkei Avos is only 5 chapters, and the Rambam's introduction is 8 chapters. It's bigger than the Masechta itself. And the Rambam discusses many, many fundamental issues. He talks about the nature of midos, personality characteristics, and he uses medical analogies. He's very into medicine. The Rambam was a doctor. And he says that bad midos are a sickness of the soul. And there's medicines that have to be taken for sicknesses of the soul, just as there's medical treatment for sickness of the body. For sickness of the body, you take physical medicine. Sickness of the soul is Musar and Torah learning and the advice of the wise and everything else. But the Rambam discusses in a number of places that midos ra'os are a mechitza. Mechitza means a wall, a barrier of connection with God. It is a blockage. If a person only has a little, you know, one bad midah, so there's one mechitza. If you have 10 bad midahs, there are 10 mechitzas. He says, and therefore one cannot have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu if there are midos ra'os, because they block their mechitza. So we have different ways of describing it. Here we describe it as the impurities that prevent you from making a vessel. The Rambam describes it as a mechitza that blocks connection, right? So there are different, these are spiritual ideas, so there are different physical ways of describing it. But the bottom line is the same. It's a musar to all of us. I mean, I include myself, musar to all of us, that how we have to strive to grow and improve ourselves in the midos, especially bein adam lechavero, between man and man, because essentially that's how midos normally play out. And otherwise our Torah will not enlighten us, will not lift us up, will not bring us closer to Hashem, and fakert, it may even make us worse in some ways, and we will not we'll have a mechitza that's blocking us from connecting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, what is... Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, there's a question. Now, again, so given the fact that the Gra segregates, he cuts away Pasuk Dalet from Pasuk Hei. So now, what's Pasuk Hei? Pasuk Hei says, remove the Rasha in front of the king, and then the king's kingdom will be established. So here, he says something that's also pretty amazing. Again, going with the idea that Melech, king, can refer to Talmidei Chachamim, who are called the kings in the world, because they are the ones who teach Torah. The problem here is, you know, you just mentioned the problem of the teacher being a bad influence on the students. There is actually a phenomenon that a student can be a bad influence on a Rebbe. And that is, there actually is a halacha that a Rebbe should not teach Torah. Now the question is how you apply it today. A Rebbe should not teach Torah to a disciple who is not worthy, because the Rebbe himself could be dragged down. The Rebbe, certainly the other students, but even the Rebbe himself could be dragged down by the negativity of the Talmud. And therefore, this is what it means. Take away the Rasha from the Melech, and then the Melech will be able to teach. Now, the obvious question is, I mean, what on earth does that actually mean? I mean, if you're going to tell me I shouldn't teach Torah except to somebody, you know, who believes in Torah, you might as well close down Or Samech. Every yeshiva that came, not this year, Baruch Hashem, but you know, let's say the very beginning shiur. I mean, every yeshiva that worked with Balei Tshuva, or not even people who are not yet Balei Tshuva, right? We're taking people who may not yet believe, or JLE, or any of the programs, you know, that the special programs especially. You have people who, you know, they're here to see if they believe in God or Torah's Min HaShemayim or whatever it is. So you're telling me I'm not allowed to teach them unless they already believe? How is that shy? So you have to understand a few things. You have to understand, the simple meaning would be that Bizman Hazeh, you, because of the environment, you know, Tinuk Shenishba, like babies raised in captivity, you know, you don't have, that category of absolute Russia is very hard to find. In the time of Chazal, where the whole Jewish society was largely Torah observant, if somebody deliberately rebelled, they were antagonistic, they were acting lahachis, they were acting out of spite. So such a person might be a poisonous influence on other Talmidim, a poisonous influence on the Rebbe. Today it's the other way around. If a guy comes to Or Samech, he comes to Yeshiva, What is he saying if he comes to yeshiva? Even if he says, I don't believe in God. But what is he saying?
He's saying, put in the door.
You know, maybe there's something here. I want to check it out. So for Kerik, you can't really say his coming to a yeshiva is an act of rebellion. In other words, the context there was, we kind of, you know, schlepped the guy in, because that's what you have to do. So the answer is, if he's a Russia who really rejects it, we don't do it that way. So, yeah, so you have to understand. So Bizman HaZeh, it is relatively rare to have a situation where we're marchik atonement. On the other hand, sometimes it still happens. If someone is a bad influence on other people, and the like, I don't want to use the word Russia. Russia is a very, very strong term. But I myself have had experiences very, 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 very rarely. Very, very rarely. I mean, I can think really of one, really. But where somebody was really a destructive influence because he saw, again, I'm not going to say it was vicious, but it was because of his perception. He saw everything positive that was being done as negative. Because he said, all of this stuff about Jewish people being special, all of this stuff about Judaism being, you know, unique, he thought was racist and exclusionary and denigrating. What are you gonna? I mean, how do you even? You know, you have no way of even addressing that, because why is he coming to a Jewish program if his whole idea was that, you know, Judaism should not be anything better than anything else? So that was, I think, a very rare situation of someone who had a very dangerous attitude that could undermine everything. But most of the time, people just don't know. So they'll bring up this argument, that argument, you know, so you discuss it. So the point is that this category of what's called Talmud She'eino Hagun, category in Halacha, Lo Yilamed, the Talmud She'eino Hagun. It's Halacha in the Rambam. You don't teach a Talmud who is not worthy of Torah learning. But as I say, that's a very, very rare type of situation. But even if the degree of being marchik the Talmud, we're not going to do, but it does remind us that sometimes you have to be careful that the Talmud not be a negative, destructive influence on others. And that's going to be a very difficult balance. In fact, in yeshivas generally, this is, and not only in yeshiva, even in a home, a person's own home, this could be the most difficult decision to make. And that is, you know, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Mir for so many years, was very, very reluctant to expel a bachur. Even if a bachur wasn't learning, even if he wasn't doing stuff right, he wasn't always davening. But he said, let him be in yeshiva, at least there'll be some good influence, something will rub off, he'll do something every day. It's better than being separated. And the only time he would draw the line is when the person started being a negative and destructive influence on other people. Because then the idea was, well, listen, we feel great compassion for you, but we can't allow you to drag other people down. And that's the big issue. So my favorite story about this is the story with the Chafetz Chaim. Now, there are two stories about the Chafetz Chaim, and I'm not sure if it's with the same guy or these are two different stories. I'll tell you both stories, but it might be part one and part two. Part one of the story is that there was a boy in Radin who was caught smoking on Shabbos. This is pretty serious, smoking on Shabbos, Chilul Shabbos. In Radin, Radin was not like an Or Sameach. Radin was supposed to be, you know, everybody was supposed to be very, very religious. So the Chafetz Chaim was not, you have to know, the Chafetz Chaim was not the Rosh Yeshiva of Radin. In fact, what job, it's not even clear what job the Chafetz Chaim had, but he was the founder of the yeshiva and he was the spiritual koach of the yeshiva. So the boy was so told, you have to go to the Chafetz Chaim. Very few boys ever saw the Chafetz Chaim. So the boy is shivering and frightened, and how is he going to stand before the Chafetz Chaim? And he goes to the Chafetz Chaim. And he's there for around 5 or 10 minutes. And he walks out, and they say that he totally changed. He became a tzaddik and a chassid. He became a very, very religious person for the rest of his life. So a rabbi was speaking in Florida, and he was talking about, how do you motivate people to change? So the rabbi said this story, and then he said, if only I knew what the Chafetz Chaim said to that person. If only I knew, I would know the secret of motivation. So in the back of the audience, an old man gets up on a cane. This never happens to me, I don't know. An old man gets up on a cane and says, I will tell you, because I am that person. I am that person. The man's in his 90s now. And the person said, I went to the Chafetz Chaim and I was frightened. I really was scared. Because I don't know, when he cursed me, I would drop dead. Well, what would the Chafetz Chaim do? I just had no idea. And the Chafetz Chaim was very, very short. In fact, this was a 16-year-old boy. He was taller than the Chafetz Chaim already. And this little man bent over with the striking blue eyes. And he takes my hand in his two hands. And I feel the warmth of his hands. Then he looks at me and tears come out of his eyes. And they fall onto my hand, the hot tears that kind of burns my hand. And he said, Shabbos, Shabbos. What about Shabbos? And I saw in his eyes and in his tears the pain that he had for me and the love that he had for me. And how much he was so in pain that a Yid was not keeping Shabbos. And I resolved I could never cause him that pain again. And Kal v'chomer Hashem. And that made me religious. He said that made me religious. Feeling the Chafetz Chaim's love for me. Okay, this is what he said. Now that's part one of the story. Now there's another part. I'm not sure if it's the same person. It might be a different person. Different story. In which the Chafetz Chaim actually kicked somebody out for a Chilul Shabbos. And as the person was leaving, the Chafetz Chaim said, where are you going? He said, well, the Rebbe told me to leave. The Chafetz Chaim said, no, I said, you can't stay in yeshiva because you're a bad influence. But I'm not going to abandon you. You stay in my house and you'll learn with me. So I don't know if this is a case of a chote nisker, of the sinner getting a real prize here. On the other hand, learning with the Chafetz Chaim would certainly not be that easy. I mean, you really can't come late to Seder, you can't schmooze that much, for two reasons, Bittul Torah and Lashon Hara too. You'd be out of two reasons why you couldn't schmooze. But still, this is such a beautiful story because it shows that, yeah, we have an achrayas, a responsibility to protect everybody, but that doesn't mean we don't care about the person who has to be expelled. We try to create some environment for them. You don't simply say, oh, you're worthless, so forget about you. You have to try to do both at the same time. So that's kind of the issue with the Talmud She'eino Hogun, that you still try to find some way where he will not be a negative influence on others. Yeah.
One of the Bachas told me, I don't know if it's true, but they say that Lazarus, if he ever had to kick him out, and the Bacha, he would fast before making that decision.
I don't know if it's true, but knowing every Lazarus, it very well might be true, and it is a beautiful, that type of approach is very, very much so. The Chazon Ish put it, in fact, actually, maybe there's an analogy here, because it actually fits. The Chazon Ish said, deciding to expel a person is like dinei nefashos. It is like a capital court, capital trial, whether you're going to put somebody to death. You need a beis din of 23 judges. But I would just add, based on that story, that there is a halacha that before a Sanhedrin would vote to execute somebody, they would fast that day. So it actually fits with the Chazon Ish's statements and the like. Yeah.
We have the Seder where everyone in the family is invited and guests as well. And we have in the Haggadah itself, the Rasha speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Environment, though, where the parents sitting at the head of the table presumably know who these people are.
Right.
The person sitting at the head of the table will hopefully have a good hashpa, even on the person who has these kinds of questions, and will not let this person damage the environment.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, the Babaji Rebbe used to say that even the Russia deserves some credit because he showed up. There's the fifth son who's not even there, and that's a much bigger problem. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, that's the meaning of the phrase in the Haggadah. The Haggadah has a phrase when the Rasha says defiantly, "Why are you doing this stuff?" Meaning, you do it. I don't care about it. So it says, "You hakei et shinav." Now, some people translate, "You knock his teeth out." But really, hakei et shinav does not mean knock his teeth out. It means you blunt his teeth. Meaning, he's like biting people. So you simply want to take away his ability to be a bad influence. That's what it means, blunt. To blunt somebody's teeth means they won't be able to have a sharp bite. And that's really the idea. Okay, but this is, so according to the Gra, again, Pasuk Daled is the mitzvah, or the obligation, to perfect our own midos before we can learn Torah properly. And Pasuk Hey basically says that we have an achrayas, a responsibility, not to let negativity among Talmidim be like a cancer that can spread and even drag the Rebbe down as well. Right? Even the Rebbe could be dragged down on a very simple level, because again, it's really just the negative of Chazal's statement. Because if Chazal say, "I learn much from my teachers and more from my colleagues and most from my Talmidim," well, it stands to reason, if the Talmud is negative, you're going to learn a lot from the Talmud as well. So there could be a negative influence as well as a positive influence.
Is it possible when it says the vessel will come out by getting rid of the dross,
yep,
that if you would leave the dross in, there would be a vessel, but that vessel would not be an enduring vessel. It would still be a vessel,
right,
but eventually it would crack and it would
right,
fall apart.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, in the language of Kabbalah, they constantly, although it doesn't really fit the physics that well, but there's a constant idea that a vessel is supposed to contain light, and if the vessel is not a strong vessel, the light will smash the vessel. That is the whole, right, that is the whole metaphor of Lurianic Kabbalah about the breaking of the vessels. Really very profound, the whole process, that the whole purpose of earthly existence, the whole purpose of the universe, is to gather the sparks of light that have been scattered because of the shattering of the vessels. Although in our common speech we don't look at light as shattering vessels, but about a laser, you know, concentrated light can indeed shatter a vessel. So yeah, that's exactly right. So a kli with dross cannot hold that light of Torah. Okay, now we then get to Pasuk Vav, which has another interesting lesson for practical yeshiva learning. It says, "Al tisadar lifnei melech, tisadar." Do not glorify yourself in front of a king. Ubemakom gedolim al ta'amod, and do not stand in the place of greatness. Meaning, don't try to show up, but you see in a moment. Again, Pasuk Zion is connected. Ki tov amor lecha alei heina. It is better for you to be in a low place, and people say, "Come on up." Me hashpilcha lifnei nadiv, than to be lowered. Meaning, if you try to go to a level that you're not ready for, they're going to throw you down. Better to be in a situation where they want to bring you up than a place where they push you down. So here the Gra says the following idea. When it says, do not glorify yourself in front of a king, again, the Gra consistently always learns that melech refers to Rabbanan, Talmidei Chachamim. So he says, I'll just read the sentence, kasher ata lomed etzel rav, when you learn with a Rebbe, al talmar lefanav chidushecha v'torosecha. Again, I don't mean to discourage anybody, but I'm just reading. Do not say before the Rebbe your chidushim and your Torah. Re'ei tamid l'kabel mimenu Torah. When you sit with the Rebbe, you want to hear what the Rebbe says. Hear what the Rebbe says, and the like. Where did I see this? It's very, very fascinating. I mean, let me give you an extreme example. I saw, yeah, it was a video, a Sukkot video, when Rav Chaim Kanevsky and the Rebbetzin Olah HaShalom went to visit her father, Rav Yashiv Satsal. So they're sitting in the Sukkah, and Rav Chaim Kanevsky sits before his father-in-law with real, real reverence, deference. Like he wouldn't say anything, you know. He wouldn't even say a chiddush of Torah. And until Rabbi Yashub asked him what he said, Yashub would say whatever he was saying. And then he would ask Rav Chaim what Rav Chaim thought. But Rav Chaim was sitting mamish, ketalmid lifnei Rabbo. Now here you have a person, a Gadol Hador, a person that's an awesome baki in Kol HaTorah Kula. But he wanted to hear what Rabbi Yashub had to say. You know, so the Gra says that sometimes people want to. Now again, this doesn't mean, you have to understand, I mean, part of chinuch is that a person needs to be willing to ask questions and be willing to give his own svaras and his own insights, because the Rebbe can help him to see if that's correct or not correct, and that's how we grow, right? So we're not talking about that. But sometimes it is true that there's a tendency that people just want to say their own vort all the time. The Brisker Rav, okay, listen, these are my drinks, and none of us are around at all, but this Brisker Rav, you know, people used to always go to the Brisker Rav to ask kashas. The Brisker Rav didn't have a yeshiva, but all B'nai Torah and Eretz Yisrael would come to be able to talk to him. And he was very, very open to anybody, like virtually all times of the day or night. People would come and ask kashas, and he would, you know, be miyashiv, try to explain. But there was a certain genre that he was very impatient with, and he basically said that he has a chiyuv to answer, right? Since a Rebbe is mechuyev to teach Torah, just like there's a mitzvah to learn Torah, there's a mitzvah to teach Torah. It's a mitzvah. So he says he's mechuyev. If anyone asks him for pshat, he is mechuyev to give a person pshat, because that is his chiyuv to teach Torah. But he says when people just want to come and tell him their chidushim, see if he likes it. He said that he wasn't mechuyev to do that, and he said he didn't want to take up time doing it. He said, so, because no, somebody compared it. There was a big Talmud Chacham who wanted to come and tell him over chidushim, and the Brisker Rav says, I'm sorry, I don't have time. No, politely. Then there was another man, like a simple balabas, who like asked the Brisker Rav, how do you make tea on Shabbos or something? So the Brisker Rav spent like 20 minutes going through Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni. So I think one of his sons asked him, you know, he said, I mean, L'chaira, this first person was a Talmud Chacham, he probably would have also taken, 20 minutes or whatever it is. So the Brisker Rav said, I'm mechuyev to explain Torah to people, I'm not mechuyev to listen to people's chidushim. But be it as it may, although a Rebbe should be open to everything, but the Talmud should know that Al Tisad Rav Neimelech Al Taimer Lefanav Chidushecha V'Torasecha Re'ei Tamid L'Kabel Mimenu Torah. And he brings another Gemara that says, famous Gemara, the Gemara is in Megillah, Mila B'Sela Mashtuka B'Train. What does that mean? If a word is worth a Sela, being silent is worth double. Okay, so the value of silence will be double that of actually talking. Okay, now that's the first thing. Now the second thing, do not stand among Gedolim. What does it mean, do not stand among Gedolim? You're supposed to go to Gedolim. So listen to this. Im harav gadol mimcha. If the Rebbe is very much greater than you, that you don't really understand him that well, al tamad lefanav, then he shouldn't be your Rebbe. Teilech l'rav acher she'eino charif kamo. Go to another Rebbe that's not as sharp or as difficult. Now again, the issue is a lot going up in shiurim. I mean, this is a very practical issue, right? We have a hierarchy. We have it's not a question of. It's not so much Rebbe being greater than a Rebbe, but Baruch Hashem, everybody's good. But we talk about higher shear, lower shear. And the issue of higher shear, lower shear is a big issue of status for people. And again, I'll be honest, you know, people have status, a certain status. You know, you're in the center, you got to go to the Beis Medrash, and then the Beis Medrash, you go to Rav Dal, and then you got to go to Rav Kanik, and then Kolel. Right? There's this concept of, I got to go up. So the Gra says, again, common sense, but the Gra says it, that sometimes going up is not always the best idea. Maybe going up has status, and maybe a certain amount of kavod, whatever it is. But sometimes, you know, if the Rebbe is more advanced than you're ready for, it is better, he says, to learn at a lower level with the Rebbe that you can understand. Right? That's what the pasuk means, instead of saying, I got to go to a gadol. Now, this is certainly true. I mean, let's take a very practical example. You know, I gave the example of the story about the Chafetz Chaim offered to learn with the person. I mean, let's imagine, it's hard to believe, let's imagine Rav Eliyashiv would say to you, he's not alive anymore, but when he was alive, he would say to you that he'll learn afternoon Seder with you. I mean, this is truly inconceivable, but let's do a thought experiment, as Einstein would put it. Now, if you ask yourself, you know, so the first thing is, wow, what is this? This is like the most amazing thing that ever happened. The question is, it's not so pashut that would be the right chavrusa for you or for me. It's not so pashut. You're learning the person. I mean, who knows Kol HaTorah Kula? You know, what would the pace be? I mean, is he gonna teach and explain everything to you? Or is he assuming that for some reason, maybe somehow he got your name mixed up with somebody else, and well, you shall me, I don't know what it is. And he says, you know, we'll learn, you know, 100 blads in an hour. So the truth of the matter is that sometimes learning with the Gadol Hador, other than peripheral benefits, such as just looking at, I mean, even just looking at a Gadol has a great benefit, but it may not be the best thing. So the Gemara is saying sometimes the idea is not to get the best Rebbe, the highest Rebbe, the brightest, fastest Chavrusa. Sometimes a person has to have the humility to say, I'm not ready yet, and I'm going to stay at a lower level a little bit, because that way I'll understand more and I'll learn more. And he brings a very interesting raya to this. He brings Rabbi Meir Lamad, this is very amazing, Rabbi Meir Lamad Techila Eitzel Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Meir's first Rebbe, besides Elisha ben Avoya, putting that aside, but Rabbi Meir's first Rebbe was Rabbi Akiva. And what was the problem? Lo Hoya Yochol Lamekum Kameh. Rabbi Meir couldn't follow Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was too advanced. The amazing thing for the Gemara to say was too advanced for him. I don't know how old Rabbi Meir was. Halach Eitzel Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. So he went to Rabbi Yishmael, who gave a lower shear, so to speak. Lamad mimenu. And when he had absorbed the Torah from Rabbi Yishmael, he was then able to go back to Rabbi Akiva. V'achar kach chazar uba to Rabbi Akiva kasher nisgadel. Where is this from? This is a Gemara in Erevin. So it's quite amazing. So we have practical issues. You know, it's interesting. You know, I mean, let's say the Gra would be a good example. You know, if you had the zechus to go to the Gra shir, it wouldn't necessarily be the best thing for you. The Talmidim of the Gra were all gedolim. They all were gedolim. Every Talmud of the Gra was a gadol. So for you to walk into that type of shir, to walk into that type of shir, that wouldn't be necessarily how we would benefit. Although I do want to say one thing about the Gra. You know, people don't realize that although the Gra was usually not involved in that many communal activities, basically he learnt and he wrote and he taught his Talmidim. He was not the Rav of Vilna, certainly. He was not. He had no position in Vilna at all. But behind the scenes, he actually organized many, many shiurim for Balabatim. In Ein Yaakov, in Chaye Adam, which was written by his own brother-in-law, that Chaye Adam is the Vilna Gaon's Mechutin, their children married. Yeah, Rav Ram Dantzig. But it's interesting that in order to encourage people to go, it's brought down, the Vilna Gaon gave the first shir of every new shir that he started. So if he started an Ein Yaakov shir for Balabatim, these are for working people, he gave the first shir. Chai Adam shir, he gave the first shir. He argues with the Chai Adam loss. I'm not sure how he dealt with that, but whatever it would be, he picked something in the Chai Adam that he agreed with, and the like. So imagine that. You are a working person. You are a shoemaker. Okay? And you're told, you know, if you mincha marav, there's going to be a new 20 minute shir. And you sit down in the Gaon of Vilna giving that shir. Right? So that was it.
His wife gave him kavod. He learned with the Vilna Gaon.
Well, it's an amazing thing. People say we don't even understand the influence that the Vilna Gaon had. You know, the shuls in Vilna were still there until the Holocaust. The Nazis destroyed them, but they were, you know, the Vilna Gaon's shul and his makom. So they say a person once came to a shul In fact, it wasn't even in Vilna. I'm not sure if I remember the whole story. He was traveling in Poland somewhere, and he davened mincha in an old shul. And he said afterwards, he says, I never had kavana like that before. That was like the greatest mincha I ever davened. I don't know what was so special. It turned out, and there was a record of this, that the Vilna Gaon had once davened in that shul in the back, and that's where he davened. So this person just happened to daven where the Vilna Gaon davened. He didn't even know. And that somehow made his tefillah better than it ever was in his life. That was the kedusha that was created. We don't even understand this. It's not a rational thing. It's
God,
not like
you're awake. Yeah. If I wanted to daven in your place,
not gonna work. But I'm saying it's not even like I'm inspired. I can understand. I'm standing in the Vilna Gaon's. First of all, in the real Vilna Gaon's place, they wouldn't allow you to come in anything. But then a person goes, I'm so inspired, I'm in the place of the Vilna Gaon. The guy didn't know this was the Vilna Gaon had ever davened there. And it was just once. And it was 150 years before. And there was still a roshim of Kedusha that was there.
The first part of the pasuk was this, Alti Sader, don't
yep.
give your Kedusha.
Right.
Is that partly why, like, at least in Sfarim, the Skelmans are very like, well, I saw Bidus and really pay attention to the Sefer so much. Because a lot of the Rabbanim are very like that.
There might be. But on the other hand, I think part of it is also a Lamaisadik problem. I mean, a Gadol may get, especially now, more Sfarim are being written now. There used to be an idea that only a Gadol could write a Sefer, meaning if you weren't already an established Gadol, you would not even write a Sefer. Today, our Cheshbon is not that way. Today we actually encourage people to write Sfarim, even in Kolel, whatever it is, because it's a way of giving them Chizuk. So we do encourage people to write Sfarim, but that means many, many more Sfarim are written and published today than ever in any time. Some of them are very good, and some of them are not so good. Obviously, there'll be different qualities. But if a Gadol, how many Sfarim is Chaim Kineski is given to give a Haskamah, it becomes impossible. It just becomes impossible. So they have to say, I look at a few things, I open it up two places at random, it looks good. Now that creates problems sometimes, because sometimes there'll be things in the Sefer that are really problematical. So the Gadol has to say, that I didn't look at everything in the Sefer. But Memela, what's going to be if the Talmud Chacham had to read in its entirety every Sefer, he would never be able to learn. He couldn't learn his own learning. So that's a difficulty. They say Rebbe Yashiv used to read. For in truth, when you're already a Gadol, you can actually go through a Sefer much faster than most people. But still, 100 Sfarim adds up. They say Rabbi Yashiv used to read new Sfarim during supper. That's what he would do. That was like his recreational reading was new Sfarim. What did he say? His favorite Sefer was the Mishnah Lemelech. Mishnah Lemelech is very, very involved. Pulpulim. So to him, this was like candy. So he would not allow himself to read Mishnah Lemelech. He says, during the Zman Mishnah Lemelech, he only did Bein Asmanim, because he says it was like a pleasure for him, and it was not the Iker limud of the Sugya, it was like something extra, so he would do it Bein Asmanim. His vacation was he would learn Mishnah Lemelech, Mishnah Lemelech Bein Asmanim. Okay. Alrighty. Now again, we have going to Pasuk Ches. Al teitse l'riv maher, pen ma tase b'yacharisa, b'hachlim oscha reyacha. So again, the pasuk again starts off with simple advice: do not be in a hurry to get into a fight or a quarrel, because what will you do at the end when the other side embarrasses you? So again, the simple meaning, which is totally valid, is that often we are very sure that we are right. And if someone takes a position against what we think, whether it's about politics, the news, halacha, So we sometimes tell the person, oh, you're ignorant, you don't know what you're talking about. Obviously, the halacha is what I say. So it basically says, don't rush to judgment. Don't make certain assumptions, because what might happen is you might be very, very embarrassed when the other person shows you that you are wrong. It's happened. That certainly happened to me. It could happen. Probably happened to everybody, that one was so sure about their position and it just turned out to be incorrect. So therefore, the concept is: do not rush to assert the rectitude, the correctness of your position, because what's going to happen when you get embarrassed and you're shown to be wrong? Of course, this is really the parallel. If you remember, I mentioned it last week. The Anshei Knesset Habdola. The very first thing they taught was Havu Mesunim Badin. Mesunim Badin means be patient and gradual. Deliberate. Take your time. Don't rush and make an assumption right away, because our assumptions can often be incorrect. Now, they do say by Gedolei Torah, often the first Hergish is correct, but what do they say in the name of the Sma? The Sma, although the Sma write somewhere that das balabatim hepech das Torah, meaning to say sometimes a person who is not so learned, and that may apply to all of us, their first intuition is often bedafka not going to be correct. Their intuition is incorrect. What do they say a maisa once? They tell a maisa with the Or Samech and the Rugged Shavar. And this was an interesting team. They were the two rabbanim in the Latvian town of Dvinsk. The non-Chassidish Rav was Rav Meir Simcha, the Or Samech. And the Chassidish Rav was the Rugged Shavar Gaon. He was born in Rugged Shavar. Rav Yosef Rosen, right? So Rav Meir Simcha is Rav Meir Simcha Kohen, and the Rugged Shavar is Rav Yosef Rosen. And they were very good friends, very, very good friends, but they had very, very different personalities. Rav Meir Simcha was very quiet and very gentle, and externally very, very kind, you know, etc. The Rugged Shavar was fiery and stormy, also big tzaddik, but he was fiery and stormy and turbulent. So if you'd ask him a kasha, you know, he would give you immediately 150 Mara Makomos with Bavli, Yerushalmi, and Zohar. And in fact, the Rav Simcha said on the Rugged Shavar, people say the Rugged Shavar has a good memory. Not really, because he just finishes Shas every day, so... So any Gemara he quotes, he just learned it today. So what's the big deal? He doesn't need a memory. But the Rugged Shavar was a phenomenal genius. Rav Simcha also was, but as they say, Rav Meir Simcha was easier for a regular person to talk to. Rav Meir Simcha was just a quieter, more gentle personality in that way. So the story goes that they once had a machlokas in halacha. So the Rugged Shavar, who tended to be a little sarcastic sometimes, said, okay, let's ask the man in the street, and whatever the man in the street says, we know it's the opposite, because Das Torah is Keneged Das Balabatim. So let's ask the man. So they went out and they asked the man at random what he thought about something, and he said, like the Rugged Shavar. So that would be proof that the Rugged Shavar is wrong. So they said, so Rav Simcha says, no, so that's the proof that I'm right. The Rugged Shavar says, no, even Balabatim have a bad day sometimes. What they say is supposed to be the opposite. But they say that the Rugged Shavar was, technically the Rugged Shavar was Chabad Chassid, actually. It's interesting. I mean, in fact, Chabad says, I don't know if it's true, but Chabad claims that the Lubavitcher Rebbe of Menachem Mendel got smicha from the Rugged Shavar. Which could have been, because the Rugged Shavar was actually a Chabad chassid of the Rebbe Rav Shalom Dovshner. But be it as it may, the story was that Rav Aaron Cutler, who was already a Rosh Yeshiva, wanted to speak in learning with the Rugged Shavar, but he was afraid to do so, because the Rugged Shavar would rip him up. So he figured he would go as a businessman and present himself, so the Rugged Shavar would be more gentle with the businessman, you know, after all, for someone who's not learning all day. So he goes as a businessman, and he tells the Rugged Shavar some chidushim, and the Rugged Shavar is very nice to him. And the Rugged Shavar says at the end, he says, you know, for a businessman, you're not bad. You learn well for a person who's not learning all day. So that was a tough tough standard. Okay. Yeah, but that's the idea, that sometimes our instincts are not correct, and we have to be careful. We have to be careful. What do they say with Navardic? In Navardic, they used to say that it was so difficult for a person to be moda when he's wrong. They would work on the idea that when you're wrong, you have to learn to say the words, I'm wrong. So they had two Navardikas that are learning, and they have different pshat in the taisis, and one says this and one says that. And finally, they're yelling and screaming and debating and arguing. Finally, the person says, well, I see you're right. You convinced me, you're right. So the person said, Al derech hamusar, it's not enough for you to say I'm right. You must say the words, I am wrong. So the person said, what are you bothering me? You're right, I agree with you. What do you want? So, no. It's easy to say you agree with me. You have to say the words, I'm wrong, because that's hard for a human being to say, I am wrong. And that was the avodah. You have to work on yourself to say, I was wrong. I made a mistake. I'm not perfect. And think about it. It actually is easier to say, you're right in an argument. You're right than saying I'm wrong. It's, even though it's semantics, seems to be the same thing. But I'm right. You know, when I say you're right, I mean, I have a point too, but you're right. If I'm wrong is like being makir, you know, that I was incorrect.
Even though it seems like someone's going to come up and you'll be embarrassed by someone, maybe you said something that was totally wrong, or maybe even could have offended them. In as a professor, professor of law, if a person puts the word alleged, the other person, I thought of it, or nearly, it appears to me, it's right. Not like they're coming with an aggressiveness of a definite, even though Torah is a definite thing. So some great rabbis always said nearly, sense of humility, and then someone else could go against me and say, okay, I was wrong.
Well, that's why they also, not just nearly, they would say nira lefi ani astati. That's an expression, according to the poverty of my understanding. Although those became stock expressions, but they began because the person was genuinely writing with humility and the like. Okay. Now, Pasuk Tes, though, so if Pasuk Ches is basically saying, be modest enough to concede defeat, Pasuk Tes talks about how to be gracious in victory. And there's the other way. Let's say you win. That is, Rivcha Rives Reyach. If you quarrel, this is in Torah learning, with your friend, and you turn out to be right, Sod Acher Al Tageo. Do not reveal the secrets of the other. So here the Gra says the following. This is very, very interesting. That, let's say, the Gra says, we're discussing in learning. And my Svara, or your Svara, is so overwhelmingly clearer and better that it really slugs up the other argument. But this person finds in a sefer that his argument is there, and the mechaber wasn't omeid, did not really realize all of the questions. So it says, the Vilna Gaon says, you who is victorious, should not reveal the identity of that sefer that said the thing that's incorrect, because that would be a bit of a bizayon, a bit of lashon hara on the mechaber, meaning to say, don't reveal the shameful secrets, meaning if a gadol b'Torah was nichshal, it's always a question, how do you know that he's wrong? But if a gadol b'Torah was nichshal in missing an obvious point, then you shouldn't, in other words, you shouldn't say in a shir, let's say, it's not going to happen, but let's say a very, very great gadol. Now you think a very great gadol made an obvious mistake, you know, you really shouldn't say a great gadol made this mistake, you should just say your hara, and let people find it out for themselves. Now again, I think there's a lot of problems how to apply this, because, let's say, Lamashal, that you said a svara, and the svara really has such excellent proofs, and Rebbe Kivager says the other way around, and you have strong, strong kashas on Rebbe Kivager, that Rebbe Kivager seems to be contradicted by many, many good rayas. So the Gra seems to be saying, when you're giving your shir, don't mention Reb Akiva Eiger, because that way you would be saying that he made a mistake. I'm not sure how you apply that halacha, because I think you could do it another way. You could say the other way. You could say, although I thought I was right, but if Reb Akiva Eiger said this, it must be that he's right and I'm wrong, although I don't have a teretz. I mean, that's a very different thing. That's not saying, oh, even Reb Akiva Eiger, you know, didn't think of that brilliant thing that I thought of, right? You know, that's a very different thing. It's the other way around. That's why it's always a different, you know, Reb Akiva Eiger asks, Reb Akiva Eiger has a whole hierarchy of signals that he uses when he asks Akasha. Sometimes he asks, Sarechian. Sometimes he says, Sarechian Godol, meaning it's a stronger Akasha. Sometimes he says, Hashem Yoyer Einai, which is said to be, he's at the end of his rope, meaning I have no hope. I just this is that. So there's a whole machlokas in the yeshiva world. Are you supposed to try to answer Reb Akiva Eiger's conscience? Some say it's a chutzpah to think you have an answer. You think Reb Akiva Eiger didn't think of whatever it is you want to say and rejected it? How can you possibly? Of course, we're not saying don't come up with what you might think is an answer, but never say it as a teretz. Say it, this is what I would have thought, but Reb Akiva Eiger apparently rejected it. So some say it's an asas panim to try to think that you've answered Reb Akiva Eiger's kasha. On the other hand, you can look at it the other way, because Reb Akiva Eiger is usually asking a kasha on somebody. So let's say Reb Akiva Eiger is asking the kasha on Tosos. So if you answer Reb Akiva Eiger's kasha, you're removing a kasha from Tosos. So is it better to make Tosos come out good or Reb Akiva Eiger come out good? Like, who are you supposed to be machshiv? I don't know. It's an interesting question. But the point that Vilna Gaon makes is, don't get honor by humiliating great Talmidei Chachamim, even if you feel they made a mistake, and maybe they did make a mistake. Don't put it in the way of triumphalism over a Talmid Chacham. That is Sod Acher Al Togel, do not reveal. Of course, one beautiful story I know, which told you the other way around, Rav Chaim Moser Grodzinski was the Gadol Ador. We've talked about him. He was not only the Gadol Ador in Yediyas HaTorah, but really in he took care of Klal Yisrael. These were the years before the Holocaust. He was the one that got, he died in 1940, the beginning of the Holocaust. He was the one that got the whole Mir Yeshiva to Shanghai. I mean, he arranged everything. He really was in charge of the Jewish world. The whole world was totally on him in times of great, great danger and turbulence throughout the world. So he had relatively little time to learn. In fact, they say, I don't know if it's true, that he used to, that they found his list of Rosh Hashanah resolutions, Kabbalahs. And it was, I will learn at least a half an hour a day. This is what it said. And they said he wasn't always able to keep that. Because what he meant, you know, what he meant by learning a half hour a day, it could be he was learning 18 hours a day, but he didn't have that undisturbed time. So the story goes that he had no yeshiva in Vilna. He didn't have time for regular talmidim, but people would come in and schmooze with him in learning and the like. So once a big Eloi came in, a person who was known as a big Eloi later life as well, a kind of a photographic memory, Bavli Yerushalmi. And Reb Chaim Moser was saying over a Ha'ara, and since this person had this photographic memory, so Reb Chaim Moser said it's Taisvis on, I don't remember the exact daf, but Yud Chesam and Aleph. So the Bachar shouted out, which he shouldn't have. He says, no, it's Yud Tesam and Beis. So Reb Chaim Moser said, well, I don't know. I think it was Yud Chesam and Aleph. And the Bachar, no, he said, let's go take a Gemara to see. So Reb Chaim Moser said, he says, you know, I'm an older man, maybe my memory's not so good, you know, you're probably right. So afterwards they went and they checked, the guys went and checked, and Reb Chaim Moser was right. But he didn't want to embarrass this young man, so Reb Chaim Moser just said on himself, I don't have a memory, my memory's not so good, so I just forgot it.
Block the man's shidduch.
Yeah, but you see what a godless that is. That here the Gadol Ador is willing. Of course, for us, an Arma Drager forgetting a daf, being off by a daf, is nothing to even feel bad about. Okay, but for people like that, this was a major catastrophe, to be off a daf. I think Rabbi Yashar once said that, if he's off a daf, he says, you know, he's not going to paskin anywhere. That's what he said. You know, if he's off a daf or anything like that. So Rav Chaim Heiser was willing to suffer some embarrassment not to be mevayish this person. I'll tell you another story about that. Rav Yitzchak Elchanan. Now Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, why he was named after him, Yeshivas Rabbein Yitzchak. Rav Yitzchak Elchanan was also the Gadol Ador before Rav Chaim Heiser. And again, when I say Gadol Ador, I mean Bedavka, the one that took responsibility for all of the Jewish people. Not just in Torah learning, but, you know, in terms of tzedaka, chesed, refugees, all of the problems of Am Yisrael. Rav Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. So here's a fascinating story, just to show you his seichel hayashor as well, that he gets a telegram from a kehila that asked him about a question about milcha kefleshet pots getting mixed up together, and are they kosher, are they not kosher? So he couldn't really figure out. It was a complicated shaila, but it was a shaila that's beferish in the Prima Gadim and other achronim. So he couldn't figure out, like, why are they sending him this shaila? Like, why are they asking him? They have a rav, and he knew they just hired a rav recently. In fact, he had recommended a person. So why are they sending him a basar b'chalav shaila? So listen to his reasoning. His reasoning must be, it must be that there's a group of people that don't like this rav, and they asked him the shaila, and he gave them a wrong answer, and now they want to get an answer from me so they can use it against him to fire him. So what do I do? If I assume that the Rav gave the wrong answer, I can't write the wrong answer, because that would be sheker. But if I write the right answer, they're going to use it against the Rav. And the Rav is roi lekach. He's deserving of the position. So listen to what he did. He wrote the wrong answer, and he sent it by mail. Then he wrote the right answer, and he sent it by telegram. And he said, I wrote you a letter giving this psak, which I understand is probably the same psak your Rav gave, but I made a mistake. I made a mistake, and in going over it again, I saw that the answer should be this. So, they're going to get the right answer before they get the wrong answer, but they can't use it against the Rav, because even Rav Chaim Ozer made the same mistake. So how could Yitzchak Elchanan made the same mistake? So how could they use it against him? Right? Wow. This was number one. Number one, the amazing brilliance. Common sense and brilliance of reconstructing the scenario, which actually was the case, but also the tremendous humility that he was willing to say he made that mistake. Now again, he did it in a way that nobody would be misled lahalacha, because the telegram gets there before the letter, but this was the anava that they had, the tremendous humility that these gedolim had. Okay. Okay, we'll do one more pasuk, Yud Aleph. Again, it's a famous pasuk, although it's a very obscure pasuk. Tapuchei Zahav, B'maskios kesef. Well, this is often used in Haskamas for Sfarim. You'll see why. Davor, davor, al afnav. So tapuchei zahav are golden apples. Now the term golden apples, actually it's the modern term for oranges. Tapuz is an abbreviation to tapuchei zahav. But the way this is understood is this is not referring to citrus fruits. But it's either referring to apples themselves, can be called golden, like, you know, because of the red and the light, or it literally means golden orbs, gold balls, can be described as tapuchei zahav, b'maskios kasef, that are covered with silver filigrees. So it's giving you a mental picture of, imagine a gold ball, a nice orb of gold, that is like silver filigrees, like fine silver lines across it. So you can see the gold peeping through the openings in the silver, but the gold is largely covered by the silver. Now, it's a beautiful contrast between the redness or the gold color and the silver color. So it says, like a gold apple that is covered with a silver filigree, is a word that is spoken in the right time. A good vort, a vort that is fitting for the occasion. Sheva brachos, a bris, right? Sometimes, you know, let's say somebody's getting married, right? You're speaking at a Sheva Brachas, right? So you decide, oh, I'm thinking Sheva Brachas. Oh, yeah, well, you know, I'm learning this really interesting sugya about good achis mechitza. So you give a whole vort on machlokas rishayim about what is a kosher mechitza for Shabbos. And then you say, oh, by the way, you know, when you have a wedding, you have to have a mechitza, you know. Or between a husband and a wife, there shouldn't be mechitza, you know. So you say something at the end that, you know, connects it. That's the opposite. Davor, davor alafna. This is what Shlomo Melech is praising. That there are words that are appropriate and right and correct for the occasion. That help people be nisragesh, be aroused by the sanctity of the particular moment. And that's a special gift. Now, the analogy is not so clear, other than, we'll see, the Gra will give us an illumination here. On the most superficial level, it's just saying, it is as beautiful as the gold apple covered with the silver, but it's not so clear, why do you pick that example of something beautiful? But the overall idea is that words should be chosen to express the significance of an occasion. They shouldn't just be something, even if it's Divrei Torah, that you then patch on, but it should be a message that's miyuchad to the occasion. Now, what is the particular significance of the gold apples in the silver filigree? So here, the Gra says the following. Haroa shalobiyan, I'm reading a little bit. If you look superficially, apparently there's much more silver covering the gold. So you're not going to even look and see the gold that much. Ein haroa raka kesev lo esazav. Avol haroa biyan ubeina pakicha. But when you look closely and with an open eye, roa shetachas hakesef yesham zahav. Under the silver, there is something even more valuable. There is the gold. So the Vilna Gaon says, in a way, this is the whole Torah, because the Torah is many, many levels. We have pardes. Pardes means the garden of Torah. So the pei is pshat, the basic understanding. And then we have remez, are the allusions to other things, and drash is the expansion, and sod is the secret lore of the Torah. But the Vilna Gaon says that in reality, the secrets of the Torah is the gold. The silver of the Torah is the pshat, the external level. So he says that true pshat will be consistent with the most innermost secrets of the Torah as well. Meaning it's not going to be a different realm. Meaning if you truly have pshat, in other words, what the Gra is saying is, you don't really have pshat unless your pshat corresponds to the deepest meanings of the Torah. And therefore, the same way the gold is covered by the silver, but the gold is there, in the silver of your pshat, it should be covering the gold beneath. And therefore, there has to be an inner consistency on all levels. That's why they say, "Bisof yamav." I don't know how long this was. At the end of the Vilna Gaon's life, the Vilna Gaon actually only learned Chumash. He only learned from a Sefer Torah, because in the simple words of the Torah, he was able to see
everything.
All of the levels, all of the rabbinic interpretations, all of the sodos. In the pshat of the Torah, he saw all of these things. And that's the ultimate level. That in the silver, there you can see the gold behind the silver. Okay? Okay. Okay, we'll stop here. I think, Baruch Hashem, I think we have a seam tonight. Yishai's making a seam. Okay, there's a CM also, though. You want to say the Kaddish now? Okay, you can do it.